Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 22. And Dave, the Steelers went to 2-0 yesterday, but more importantly, happy anniversary.
Yeah, 24 years today. I can't believe she's put up with me that long. You put up with me about a quarter.
A third
of that time already. So imagine having to do that three times over and being legally bound at that.
Well, I hope you have a fun day and make it to 25.
Yeah, I'm sure we will, unless she's able to connect with one of the gunshots.
All right.
Hey, before we get started here, at the end of the last podcast, you threw out there to listeners to let us know where they're all chiming in for. Now, I don't want to put any pressure on you, David, but your voice right now is being heard pretty much globally. Well, it is globally. We just heard from, I think, Ben.
I wouldn't do a whole list for the next episode because I know we heard from a bunch of guys in the UK. We got Scandinavia represented, Australia. We didn't get any Eastern Europe. We didn't get much of the continent so far, or South America. I know we got some listeners in Canada and Mexico, but you're right. And it was at the very end of the podcast. So, we'll throw it out there one more time. If you're listening and you're outside the U.S., give us a shout and let us know because we got a great response over the weekend.
Yeah, Ben from Newcastle in the north of England. Looks like Chris Bailey. Let's see. I'm not sure where Chris Bailey.
Oh, but yeah, he was in West Sussex, I think, or East Sussex, I think.
Okay. Let's see. Well. Iceland here from Elias. Where else do we have here? Yeah, East Sussex, England was Chris. One from Sweden. Sandviken, Sweden. I don't even know where that is. And that looks like Johan from there.
Hey, Johan.
From Thomas Ulrich here. NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium. Wow.
Oh, there we go. There we got the continent there.
Let's see what else we have here.
Well, we'll put a whole list together for the next show.
Yeah, Mackie Queensland, Australia from Alan Hunt here. So that's just pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty great. We're sure it's not us. It's the Steeler reach is far and wide. Dave, it's amazing. You know, we spend a lot of time focusing on what's going on, and we try to make sure we're on top of everything that's going on with our opponent. We even had our beat writer Ben, who did a great job, Ben Gessling, with us on Friday, and all of a sudden. I mean, Ben didn't mention – nobody knew that Sam Bradford was possibly not going to go in this game.
I did ask him about that. I said – I did ask him about that knee injury.
Right.
During that interview because he had – let's see, it was what day did we talk to him? Was it
Friday?
Friday, right. And Bradford had already been limited both of those days in practice. And I think by then there was already the report out about the MRI that Bradford had earlier in the week as well, too. But he, he didn't seem to be concerned that that Bradford wouldn't miss the game there.
Vegas didn't have any idea. We talked about the line coming down to 5.5. I mean, obviously, they didn't know that Bradford wasn't going to play.
Yeah, well, I tell you where it became evident was on Saturday when they promoted the practice squad quarterback. And I understand, well, you got to make sure you have one on the flight and all like that. You got to get it done on Saturday. Look, regardless, I don't care if you're flying or not. You've you know, Saturday is the deadline for a Sunday game to do a roster move. So don't you know, none of that home away stuff really matters there, because if you need the guy, you think you're going to need the guy Saturday, you got to promote him. So the fact that they promoted that that quarterback on Saturday, that's when a lot of eyebrows really got raised. I think then is when you started to see the line creep up a little bit to 7, I think, at the time there. And then obviously when Bradford came out ahead of the game on Sunday and really, you know, didn't do much of a workout at all, I already started writing up the post that Case Keenum was going to start, because I felt pretty confident that that was going to happen or going to be announced, you know, about an hour and a half later when the inactives came out.
Yeah, and, you know, the reality is it changed the complexion of the game. How much, hard to know, obviously we'd be speculating, but, you know, I give Case Keenum some credit for standing in there, because the Steelers obviously will put a licking on him for sure. But he's not Sam Bradford. I mean, there's a reason he is, you know, backup quarterback in the NFL, and maybe the same thing happens with Bradford. But let's get into it. Let's start with the injury report. Obviously, the most notable thing was T.J. Watt leaving the game in the second quarter with the pulled groin. And again, pulled muscles, you leave a game. It's hard to imagine that within 7 days you can get back. We'll see what Mike says yesterday. But Dave, take us through what else Mike added.
T.J. Watt, and in fact, Watt told reporters after the game he didn't think it was serious, but I don't think he got a medical degree at Wisconsin there. So we'll have to see how the
– Yeah, but no player has ever over-dramatized his injury.
Never.
Maybe Ben.
Yeah. Oh, watch it. You got to get some hate mail for that one. Let's see. Yeah, and Alejandro Villanueva left in the first half with heat-related issues. Mike said after the game that Villanueva had also been sick on top of it, so it sounds like the guy just wasn't feeling good. And if his play was any reflection in that first half, it was evident he wasn't feeling good. But the thing about it is Villanueva left. He was replaced at left tackle by Chris Hubbard. And then Villanueva had to come back into the game during the second half because Marcus Gilbert had to leave for, you know, what was it, 20 plays, 18, 17 plays, something like that, because of cramps. So Chris Hubbard really got a workout. He played left tackle. He played right tackle. He played some tight end in that game as well, too. Now, Mike Tomlin did not mention Gilbert after the game for obvious reasons because of those cramps. Villanueva, he noted, was sick. Also dinged up in that game was Jesse James with an ankle. I think Jesse hurt that ankle on, I think, the first or second offensive play.
First play of the game.
Yeah, got it kind of trapped underneath a pile there, I think. He went over there and got it wrapped up, came back into the game, and I think he kind of hobbled off at some point in the second quarter or second half as well, too, but he was able to ultimately return. So we'll keep an eye on that. But, you know, look, you take a look around the league on a week-to-week basis, and you see – you know, these injuries, season-ending injuries being suffered by various teams. And then, you know, you see that game last night with
Jordy Marshall Nelson. Yonda yesterday.
Yeah, Marshall Yonda with a broken ankle. And then Jordy Nelson leaves the game with a calf or something last night against Atlanta there. The Steelers, say what you will, the Steelers have been very, very, I don't know if you want to call it fortunate, lucky, whatever. That's what they are two games into this season right now. Now, obviously, they had several players miss the game with injuries. Stephon Tuitt, not shocking at all, sat out with that biceps injury. You know, I'm not so sure I don't let him maybe rest again against the Chicago Bears, Dave, because let me tell you, Tyson Alualu really, really has had a nice first couple of games here and really stemming all the way back to the preseason there. And as we're going to talk about in a little bit, Cameron Hayward was just all over the place Sunday. J.J. Wilcox missed a game, and you pretty much nailed that one on the head on Wednesday there with a concussion. Tight end Vance McDonald, of course, missed some practice time toward the end of the week with a back injury. If you're new and you don't practice, odds are Mike Tomlin's going to sit you, and that's what happened with him. And, of course, Gerald Hawkins, who did not practice all week with a knee, was inactive for a second week as well. So, Chicago Bears coming up. You know, you look at this thing kind of from 30,000 feet, Steelers still a healthy bunch.
Yeah, they are a healthy bunch in general, and obviously that's good news. So, Dave, let's get into this. And, you know, I came away from the game at the end saying, I'm not sure what more I know about this team than I know going in. And a lot of it obviously had to do with Sam Bradford. Look, the offense, it was a tale of two halves offensively. The Steelers, you know, they get the two big pass interference plays in the first half that are the key plays in the two touchdown drives, and that sets that up. Defensively, they were solid all game, but, you know, Bradford wasn't there. And, you know, I heard somebody say that, you know, well, the run defense looked good. Well, they gave up 4.6 yards a carry against the run. I mean, you know, some of that came in that big long run that was just short of the touchdown by Dalvin Cook, but that still counts. But, you know, in general, the defense played very well, and the offense kind of had a bit of the same result that it had last week. It wasn't clicking on all cylinders, and it was a kind of an odd game plan. We saw Ben go deep as much as I've ever seen Ben go deep in the first half, and then they were more effective kind of moving the ball in the second half, particularly late with some of the crossing routes, but weren't able to get it in the end zone. And so I think, you know, it's a win. That's what matters. That's really the only thing at the end of the day that matters. But I do understand the feeling that a lot of people might have that it wasn't all that satisfying.
Yeah, I can definitely, you know, I mean, look, I thought Ben did a great job of, along with a few other players, of kind of trying to explain why they did go deep so much. And to put a kind of a number on it, I think Ben was 2 of 11, was it, on deep passes Sunday with a few penalties mixed in. Obviously, the two penalties totaled, 49 and 20-something, so like 70-something yards on those two penalties alone. The thing is the Vikings, they played quite a bit. I don't know exactly how much quarters because we don't have the all 22 up, but they played some quarters, and a lot of times with those, even though they're playing two safeties deep, two safeties kind of deep, they weren't as deep as per se as we saw the Browns play, you know, one safety last week. So they were really inviting with a quarters coverage for a guy to try to run over the top of them. And I think that's why you saw Ben take as many deep shots as he did to try to, you know, kind of exploit that. Now, the Vikings, I thought, had some decent coverage on a few of those when they weren't, you know, holding or pass interference calls there. But make no mistake, we can call those incompletions on those two deep pass interference calls, but those are huge plays, and quite
yeah, 71 yards. I mean, the one to Martavis Bryant is as good a throw as you can make in the league. I mean, that was dead on. I mean, it hit him in the face mask. It was dead on the money. I mean, Bryant was getting tackled at the time, so not on him, but it was a perfect throw.
Right. So, you know, technically in the past, you know, we talk about the tot stat and explosive plays. I really think any play, even a penalty play that gains more than, you know, 20 or more yards, is an explosive play. And because, I mean, look at how it changes the field position and everything that goes along with that. So, yeah, he did not connect on those two passes, and, yeah, those were penalties on the other side, but those were really game-changing plays if you go back and look at this game, the totality of this game. So, yeah, you would like to see maybe Ben will be a little bit more accurate or maybe not take as – because I guarantee you, and there was one that I looked at in the first half, I think it was the first half last night, Ben going deep. I think it was on the play that – I think he went consecutive deep to Antonio Brown down the right side. Am I correct?
Yeah, that was toward the end of the half. He went it might have been three plays in a row, come to think of it. But he did, you know, I think I'm not sure they were both down the right side, but he went deep. You know, I'm not sure who the target was. Let me put it that way. But he did go deep on maybe three straight plays. And I was watching with some people, and It's just the opposite of last week when they're throwing short all the time and not getting first downs, and now they go deep all the time and don't get first downs, and people throw up their arms in frustration.
Yeah, and the reason I call out those couple plays, because one of the two, I think of, I don't know if it was the second in long or I think it was the second and long. Juju Smith is coming across on a crossing route with nobody within 10 yards of him, you know, and if Ben hits him, I'm almost certain, you know, the chains get moved. And on top of that, I'm almost certain that Juju probably has the is in his right mind to get out of bounds and stop the clock, you know, on top of it there. So, look, you don't, you know, I'm pretty sure you don't have to invite Ben or have to say anything to invite him to throw deep down the field. If he thinks he's got a remote chance to do it, he's going to do it. The thing that aggravates me, and yeah, I mean, I can understand, and we'll see how many of these plays were Ben probably should have you know, went up underneath there, is, you know, fans wanting to put this on Todd Haley. Now, if you see a route combination and all these deep routes, and we're talking about, you know, all verticals or something, yeah, maybe kind of question that, but people need to understand that the snap of the football, that Ben's probably got two or three options in the play. He's obviously got a primary. You know, he's obviously a lot probably depends on what he's looking at on across the line of scrimmage as well too. And if he sees something like a quarters coverage or a man coverage, you know, he more than likely he's probably going to take his shot if that's built in to one of his options there. So, was it a perfect offensive you know, output yesterday? No. Was it a little bit better than what we saw maybe against the Browns? Yes, and especially maybe from a running the football standpoint.
Well, let me ask you that, because what's your level of concern about the offensive line in the running game? I mean, look, they got more yards than they did last week, but it wasn't particularly effective. I mean, 102 yards on 32 carries, that's a 3.2-yard average, and James Conner had 9 of those in one of his carries. I mean, you know, they didn't run the ball that effectively.
Yeah, I'm not concerned. I'm really not, to be honest with you. I think, and look, so, you know, this was a good defense they played, and I know this is a couple of weeks in a row that you know, Ben made sure to talk about it. And I think even a few of the Steelers offensive linemen or actually Bell did after the game, said, you know, the Vikings did a good job of getting off blocks, and it really wasn't
until did a great job. They didn't give them the edge the whole game. You know, they got some upfield penetration. I thought they did a really good job against the run, and they haven't been, look, they were a top 5 defense in the NFL last year, but they were 18th against the run. They weren't they weren't a great run defense, but they were pretty damn good yesterday.
I thought so. You know, and I, you know, Le'Veon Bell said, you know, gave him some props and said, really, you know, there weren't a lot of what a lot. Now you set a running back up with a question to say, was there just not a lot of running room? And if he tells you no, then a guy in his situation is going to get blasted by the fans for saying that, in so many words, he's saying his offensive line sucks. So it's a no-win.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's a no-win situation for some of these guys, especially in the situation that Bell is with turning down the contract, sitting out all this time, yada, yada. You know where I'm going here. But I thought he answered the question the best that he could. He said, yeah, I mean, there wasn't a lot of running room early on, but he did say in the second half that the gaps were getting wider. So, and I think that's kind of evident on the tape as well, too. We'll see what the All-22 said. I think you can even started to pick that out kind of late in the first half, you know, when they're running kind of those counters there. And let's face it, as a whole, the Steelers generally don't play good against 4-3 fronts, you know, and Zimmer, this isn't Zimmer's first rodeo against the Steelers, and, you know, I think he's got a good group of guys. I mean, I think top to bottom, that's still a decent defense that Mike Zimmer has over there, and I think regardless of Sam Bradford or whoever plays, they're going to be in a lot of ball games, and if not for all the penalties that the Vikings committed yesterday, especially the crucial pass interference ones, this might have been a little bit different game yesterday.
Yeah, you know, when I think about who played well in this game, who had a great game, offensively, I don't, you know, Ben is probably the only guy. Look, Martavis did what you asked him to do when he got on the ball. He was good. So, you know, props to him. Give him a gold star. I thought Ben was pretty good. I thought he was better than he was against Cleveland. Wasn't perfect, as you said. I'm not sure I'd give anybody else kind of props on what they did offensively. I think it was, again, you know, I used the word pedestrian for the performance last in week one. And
people don't like you. us using that. One fella thinks all we do is make a living out of getting on Roethlisberger not being perfect.
You know, I couldn't have been more effusive in my praise during the game about the deep ball he threw to Martavis and, you know, how that 71 yards isn't going to show up in the stats, the 71 yards of pass interference. Yeah, look, look, they got in the end zone two times now. They've gotten the end zone four times in two games. This isn't all – somebody – I know the guy you're talking about. Somebody said, you know, what do you expect from Ben? I'm not rating Ben against the average quarterback in the NFL. I'm rating Ben against Ben, against what he's shown that he can do and what this offense has shown that it can do. And in this game, you know, they put up 26 points. We expect more. We expect them to get in the end zone more often than they did. So, look, I thought Ben played fine, and I thought Martavis Bryant was good. The offensive line wasn't as good. Ali Villanueva's really struggled here the first two games. He wasn't good yesterday. They didn't open a lot of big holes on offense, and you know, so it goes. Juju's got to stop getting penalties, man. I mean, what's he got now? Four on the – do you have two more yesterday?
It feels like – I know he had he had a false start yesterday, didn't he?
Yeah, I can't remember who got for all the penalties. I couldn't actually hear every one of the penalty calls by number, but he had two in the first game. He had one there. He's got to do a better job. There's room for improvement on the other side of the ball. We talk about what the defense did.
He had a false start and that's it yesterday. He just had a false start yesterday.
Okay. Cam Hayward on the defensive side of the ball. Cam Hayward was as good as I've ever seen him. He was blowing up the game from the get go. He was fantastic.
The thing is with him is, and I think you're gonna see this a little bit more on y'all 22 as I was going through the TV version last night. There was some times where he just wasn't even blocked hardly. I mean, he was just – you want to talk about being able to play some one gap, you know. He was just really getting through a few times untouched. And then another time, I think, kind of late in the second half, I'll put a GIF of this up on my Twitter feed. I'm going to keep saying both of those because it drives people crazy. Him against the guard and just driving him back at the snap of the football, getting his arm extended, separating for the tackle. And then I think later on, kind of late in the second half, they put a tight end on Cam Hayward. And that's just a huge, huge no-no right there as well. So
as we saw every time Jesse James was asked to block somebody.
Yeah, exactly. And look, you know, you were talking about guys that stood out offensively. I'd almost be a little bit inclined to add Jesse James to that list, from yesterday, except for the fact that, I mean, it was noticeable on a few plays that Jesse just not doing his job, not only as a run blocker, but a pass protector. I mean, who was it? Griffin just ate him alive on one of those there. So I think Cameron Hayward played a good game. I thought Tyson Alualu had a nice game. Who else?
But Bud Dupree and Anthony Chiclo were good again. I mean, those guys, look, we talk about Haley. Look, Keith Butler was bringing – he was bringing a lot of different blitzes. I mean, we saw Mike Hilton come and get a pressure on a third down play that caused Keenum to have to throw sooner than he wanted. We saw Joe Hayden come a bunch of times. They were definitely bringing those two guys – and guys from different spots. You know, we saw that it wasn't a fire X, but they came up the middle with Vince and Shazier when Vince got his sack. The Steelers did a very good job of getting pressure. And as I said at the top, I give Case Keenum some credit. He may not be a great quarterback, but you can't question his toughness, man. He stood in there and took the shots.
Yeah, he certainly did, and you're right. And wasn't it in the first half there? I don't know if it was the first or second time the Vikings driving kind of deep there. I mean, the Steelers, it seemed like, sent pressure more numbers on like three straight plays or something.
It was toward the end of the first half.
To that effect. And boy, that Mike Hilton's quick off that edge, isn't he? I mean,
he is really quick. He has been impressive, I have to say.
He reminds you a little bit of William Gay in his younger days, being able to time that thing and get off the edge there. So, look, I know Hilton really hasn't showed up a lot in the statistical category. However, he did register 9 total tackles yesterday. I think 8 on defense and 1 on special teams.
Yeah, led the team in tackles.
I like the way he kind of, on some of that underneath stuff, it seems like he clicking closes there, fairly quick, and recognition is good there. Artie Burns, you'd like to see him be a little bit more disciplined on the outside there. Not an awful game. Sean Davis, a couple of bad plays back to back, I thought.
Yeah, bad angles, bad reads on where he's, contained on the outside. He got caught up in the wash on the Dalvin Cook play, right? The run play.
Yeah, and that came right after. Forget what
the pass play to, was it the pass play to Rudolph? I can't remember, but there
yeah,
was.
Yeah, it might have been. I want to really look at that on all 22. I mean, how do you let a team like that convert on what was it, second and a mile, a third and a mile, and how do you let that? How do you let that get in between the levels there? Over your head. If anything, let them have 14, 15 yards up underneath, but you just can't let them drop that, over the second level, in between the third level there. So I'm really, really interested to go see the all 22 of that, to see where we can kind of point some fingers at. I got a pretty good idea, but I just want to make sure, before I definitely put 4 fingers pointing back at myself. Who else?
In terms of the, you mentioned both Gay and Hilton. We are seeing the changing of the guard officially, because it is clearly now Mike Hilton's job. As he played by your guys' tally there, he played 83% of the snaps. He played 55 out of 65. William Gay only saw 20, and that's not going to go the other way. I mean, that's only going to continue to go that direction. So I thought that was one of the interesting things. The other one is clearly the topic of conversation, and we didn't hit on this last Monday. We hit on it Wednesday, was James Harrison only getting 4 snaps. And then, obviously, in this one, James Harrison, not on the stat sheet, not on the play count stat sheet, a big zip with Chickalo going in on the other side when T.J. Watt goes down. I mean, Arthur Motes played, but he only got 2 snaps, so let's not make anything of that. But it's okay. What's going on?
Real quick, that Dalvin Cook run came. Remember that came right after the 21-yard completion down the right side to Diggs,
right? And who made a great catch?
Right. Great catch. And Davis, I don't think, was able to get his head around on that one. I think that was the play there. So those are the two that I want to.
Yeah, that was a good throw by Keenum, and Diggs did a great job of not showing that the ball was coming. He did a great job of deception, not putting his hands up till the end. And I don't really fault Davis as much on that one, but the next one, he got caught in the wash on Dalvin Cook.
All right, James Harrison. Man, what the hell do these people want, David? I mean, there's a lot of people up in arms today that James Harrison didn't get any snaps in that game, and especially after T.J. Watt left.
The answer, they may want to see James Harrison, but James Harrison's not going to do better than the guys who were out there. The guys who were out there did a really good job.
Yeah, I think, at some point, Debo's time's going to have to, come to an end. At least that's what I think the Bible infers. I forget what chapter and verse, but it's going to happen, and really Steeler fans should be excited right now that you've got guys like Watt and Chickalo and Dupree, and Chickalo and Watt both showing that they can play on both sides of the defense. Say what you will so far about Chickalo, there hasn't been a drop off, I don't think, in his play.
Let me chime in here on that, because I have not been, a staunch supporter of Anthony Chiclo in terms of, you know, I've said a couple times over the past few years that he's just a guy. Well, you know, so far maybe I'm being proven wrong this year because Chiclo is doing a good job. He, as you say, yet no drop off in play. He has been more than serviceable out there. And he, as you said, he showed he could play on both sides.
Right, and you know that's the and he had to play a whole heck of a lot of special team snaps yesterday. You know, in addition to that, because that was obviously in the game plan. Of course, you don't think you're going to lose Watt and all, but I mean, is it a bad thing to keep kind of keep a wrapper on Harrison as well? I mean, I think look, at some point this year, James Harrison's going to play. Probably 20 or more snaps in a game. They're running some things right now. Do you really want James Harrison running, dropping into the deep middle of the field? Have you noticed several times what they're doing with Watt? You know, they're moving him into the inside field, into the middle of the field. And he's, you know, sometimes when he's dropping into that deep area and then following some of these guys across. James Harrison can't do that, folks. And it, you know, if you go back and you look at that that interception that Watt had in week one against the Browns, there's no way in hell Debo does that. You know, I'm sorry. I mean, I love the guy, but there, you know, his limitations are now with Harrison is the fact that you put him out there, you've got to put him out there knowing that he's going to have to either A, play the run, or B, rush the passer, and how. When that happens, that kind of makes you a little predictable, right?
For sure. He did, you know, we have seen him drop into coverage, and I think he even did it once or twice against the Browns. It's just, I didn't see Dave. I didn't see all the quotes out of the locker room. I'm sure somebody, you know, I'm sure he got some questions. Did he have anything to say after the game?
I haven't seen yet or read that. You know, I was so busy last night trying to recap the game or whatnot. I'll look a little bit about for that today. But, you know, the writing's been on the wall, folks. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. We'll see what happens with this Watt groin injury. But even if Watt, let's say Watt's inactive for the game against the Bears, you know, it's a big what if. But I would expect Chiclo to start on the right side, and you know, maybe Harrison platoons with him a little bit. And don't forget that you got Arthur Motes, who you know, did what was expected of him during the preseason, and Motes can play on both the left and the right side as well, and can drop into coverage a little bit better than James Harrison can. So, yeah, I don't know what to tell the people that are mad.
No, there's nothing to tell anybody. I mean, the guys who are playing have earned their playing time, and it's fine. It's just a little, you know, from what we've seen, I just think it's a tad surprising that the way that the, you know, when Watt goes out, that Harrison's not the obvious guy to come in. So, okay, we learned something from that. We've learned something about, you know, how entrenched Mike Hilton is as the nickel guy. He's clearly the guy. We've learned that Cody Sensabaugh is not going to get on the field. You know, William Gay is going to be the sixth guy for now, and we'll see how that plays out. We've learned that Tyson Alulu is clearly the guy who's going to play. I mean, LT Walton, who I thought came on pretty strongly at the end of last season, he only saw 10 snaps yesterday. So there's not a lot of rotation. I mean, the guys who are in there are going to be the guys who are getting the snaps, and that's kind of the way it's going to be. And Bud Dupree, you know, we didn't see him in week one. He was out there for all but one or two snaps yesterday. Thought he did a really nice job, got a sack, got a pass breakup, was able to get some pressure on the inside. So, you know, this is a defense where we've talked about, you know, are they going to find the guys? Are they going to stay healthy and be on the field? And I think it's very clear that they're not running rotation at any spots on this defense. It's, you know, you've got, you know, 12 guys with your nickel guy who are going to see time, and the other guys are, you know, going to get plays here and there, but they're not going to be regular guys.
Here's the thing, too, when it comes to, you know, it's a shame right now that Tuitt's down. We'll see what happens this next week. But here's the thing I think we've learned after the first 2 weeks here, and that's the fact that Tyson Alulu is a good fit in this defense. And I think because of that, I think the Steelers can finally you know, once Tua gets back on the field, and assuming both these, you know, everybody can stay healthy there, I think this is a great opportunity to get both Hayward and Tua off the field for, let's say, 15 snaps or so a game for each of those guys. And, you know, those kind of add up towards the latter part of the season there. Now, maybe 15 is a little bit of a stretch. Maybe you're talking more about 10 each. But, you know, getting those guys off the field a little bit during games without having, you know, really significant drop-off, I think is something that Steeler fans, I know Cameron Hayward's been kind of looking for the last couple years as well, too. So that's encouraging. Ryan Shazier playing downhill, nice. I think Vince Williams playing downhill, nice. The safety play could probably be a little bit better along with the cornerback play. But, I mean, I know people will point to the opponent and say, well, look at who you beat. But so far, I'm pretty satisfied with what this defense has done. And right now, you know, looking for this offense to be the one to show the next improvement.
Yeah, I'm with you on the defense. My only critique was the late drive the Browns were able to put together to get it within a field goal in the last game. This game, the defense did everything they were asked. Really no turnovers in the game. Thielen fumbles late trying to stretch for a first down, but it was inconsequential to the impact on the game. Dave, a couple things on the coaching front. We've talked about the two coordinators.
I knew this was coming. I could feel it in my plums.
I didn't understand Mike not taking the opportunity to kick the field goal again. For those who don't remember exactly how the sequence went, the Steelers had a 4th-and-2, and Ben stands over there. By the way, how dumb were the Vikings on that first or second series when the Steelers have 4th-and-1 deep in their own territory, around their own 30-yard line, and they line up and Ben's able to get them to jump. So kudos to Ben on that play. And, you know, Randolph, who was it? Randolph was pointing at his helmet, you know, saying, dumb me. You know, I'm the dumb guy. My fault. A bunch of times, and he was in that case. And then 4th-and-2, the Steelers, I think, are on the 32-yard line. And they used their last time out with a lot of time, 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I didn't love that decision. I don't mind them going for it there. If you're going to stand over it, go for it. I got no problem with them going for it. But I didn't love them using the last time out. And they decided they wanted to kick the field goal from 47 yards. The Steelers get a false start penalty. It becomes a 52-yard field goal. Okay, Mike decides he wants to punt. With that weather and with Boswell's leg, I might have kicked it, but okay, I don't have any problem with the decision to punt, and Jordan Berry's able to drop it at the one-yard line or inside the one-yard line. That's great, but the Vikings get a penalty. The Steelers then obviously get the opportunity again from 47 yards, and Mike decides to decline the penalty and have the Vikings take over possession on their own one-yard line. They're up 11 points at the time. You have a chance to go up 2 touchdowns. You've got an all-world kicker. Boswell's been fantastic. The weather's great at Heinz Field. The length is not an issue. I understand what he did. He decided to, you know, play the field position game. But for me, I'm absolutely taking 3 points over field position, and Boswell's at least 80% chance of making that field goal.
Yeah, and I think back to I think you set that up nice. I think back to the original thing there. Why not just go for it, on 4th-and-2? Because I mean, you could that's a dagger. That can be a dagger of a drive right there, right? Because it was, let's see, it was 4th-and-2.
11-point game, yeah. 20-9.
It was 4th-and-2 at the Minnesota 29. They brought, as you said, they burned their third timeout. They roll out the field goal unit, and then of course, false start on a long snapper. We talk all the time about it's nice to not ever hear the long snapper's name. I think already we've heard candidates a couple of times. With that said, yeah, you have the no play, and then you're backed up 5 yards, and then you have Barry punt down to the one, and then you get the penalty on the other side, and you think, okay, Mike Tomlin just got a mulligan here. If it was good enough to send Boswell out 4.5 minutes ago, why wasn't it good enough to send him out there again? I think the fact that Barry pinning that thing down at the 1 yard line played a whole.
Well, obviously it did. I mean, if he punts that into the end zone and it's at the 20, you kick the field goal. I mean, clearly that was the decision. It's on the one.
Right. And would you?
I would have kicked it. I would have kicked it.
You would have even after downing at the one, you would have taken the penalty.
I'll take 3 points over 3 points and give them the ball at the 20. Kick it 10 yards out of the end zone again. I'm taking 3 points.
Okay. Yeah. That's the
point of the game, right? Score points.
All right. Let's throw that one out to the listeners there. What would you have done in that situation there? Would you have sent Boswell back out onto the field to try? Let's see. That ball would have been how long?
Same field as it was. You said 29, so 46-yarder. 46, 47, whatever it is.
Okay. With 10:08 left in the game, and the Steelers were, what was the score situation?
20-9.
It was 20-9 at the time there. Okay. Would you have sent Boswell back out there to kick that field goal, or would you have let that ball sit at the 1 yard line there with the Vikings backed up? Send that to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com and let us know what you think.
To me, this wasn't a 60-40 or an 80-20 decision. To me, this was 98-2. I mean, there's no question what I would have done. I would have sent Boswell out for the kick. If I'm a college coach and I get a questionable kicker, okay, maybe I play that game. But somebody said, it's tough to kick in that stadium, 47 yards. It's not tough to kick in that stadium on a day like yesterday. Guys are kicking the ball 9,000 miles out of the end zone. The field goals they made, everybody, they're good by a mile. I mean, yeah, I understand Boswell did miss on that first attempt where the Steelers got the break on the penalty. It happens, but the guy's track record is the guy's track record. He is a great kicker, and I would have put him back out there. So, yeah, we'll see. I don't know if there was, the fact that they didn't have any timeouts left, it turned out didn't make any difference, but not an ideal situation to have 10 minutes left in the game and no timeouts.
What did you think about the Vikings' decision to run that fake punt?
You know what we say, any gadget play that works is the greatest play ever, and anyone that doesn't work is the dumbest call you could ever make as a coach in history. I mean, it's like, it's black and white, right?
Right. Tyler Matakavich brought recognition on that. You want to talk about a guy that pays attention in special teams meetings, Dirty Red does. Because, he's kind of an inside guy on that. So if his guy releases and doesn't block, Tyler's got to run with him. The Vikings have probably said, man, that guy, that ginger out there is pretty aggressive on that punt block against the Browns last week. We're going to take advantage of him being aggressive here and knowing that he wants to go after that football again, and we're going to sneak his man out into the flat there for an easy pitch and catch. Matakavich didn't buy into that. He read his man and ran with him. Had a nice pass breakup on that. So kudos to him for sure. To Matakavich, two big special team plays. In a matter of 2 weeks there. And wasn't there one other questionable? Did you have one other questionable decision in that game, coaching decision? What'd you think about the time running out on the 2-point play?
I don't know. Was Mike hot at the refs because they maybe started the clock early, or was he hot at Ben because he didn't get it organized? I mean, we've seen this before that they've been a little slow. You celebrate the touchdown for a while, and now that you can have a group celebration, guys are celebrating. And I it's one of those things. I wasn't in the stadium, so it's a little hard to judge. Were guys celebrating too much and didn't get off the field and didn't get organized quickly enough? Or did Mike feel like the refs didn't start the clock properly?
Yeah.
Because he was hot.
Yeah, I think he didn't. I heard what he had to say during the post-game press conference. I don't know if I listened intently to that aspect of it. It seemed like he made something administrative reference or something along those lines. I don't think he blamed his players, though, for the celebration there. But, boy, it sure did seem like that play clock ran down quick there. And, obviously, it resulted in Boswell having to come out and, and kick the extra point instead of them going for two. But at least they didn't keep that 2-point play in their pocket, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I don't worry about that stuff. They've got so many of those, and they've run so many different things. So, you know, that at least to my concerns on that front.
Well, what I'm insinuating is that was the play that Juju scored the touchdown.
Yeah, could well be. Now that's interesting, and that'd be something to look to see when they lined up, if they lined up in the same formation that they used on the touchdown play. So, yeah, that's worth watching on the All-22.
Well, Ben said
it did show the formation.
Well, Ben said during his post-game press conference talking about that delay of game is at least we were able to run that play later in the game.
Gotcha. I did not hear that. So, yeah, good. I didn't know that. So, good point.
He didn't say that was the 2-point – I mean, the Juju touchdown was the play, but, you know – Sounds like it. I've gotten pretty good at putting one and one together and getting three.
So a couple guys, you know, that we haven't seen a lot of defensively so far this year. Ryan Shazier and Mike Mitchell. I'm not knocking their play. You know, Mitchell's activity is largely based on kind of what happens in front of him. Shazier, we saw him explode by a guy again in the game yesterday and miss a tackle, which could have been a big loss. But, you know, just they haven't been kind of we saw Mitchell with one big hit to get a pass breakup on Rudolph, but didn't hear their name called a lot.
I don't know. Shazier still had 8 total tackles in that game yesterday. They're probably kind of quiet ones. 5 of them, I think, were him being the primary, and 3 others with him being the assisted tackler there. He also had a pass defense in that game. I don't know. Is this just the defensive line playing that much better? You know,
that's a good question. Could be. You know, the pass defense was a bad throw by Keenum that you remember he almost had the interception, and there was a defensive back, and I'm not sure which one it was who was right behind him who kind of had his hands up as well. It would have been an unbelievable interception, but that was the pass defense that he made. Part of it's because, as people who listen to the podcast know, my expectations for Shazier are so incredibly high that, you know, I expect him to be a dominating force out there all the time. But I did a good point with Cam Hayward and Alulu being as good as they were. That maybe there's and the outside guys, the edge guys being as good as they were, Watt, Dupree, and Chicolo, but just less out there for Shazier.
Yeah.
Didn't hear a lot of Javon Hargrave yesterday either.
No, we didn't. That, you know, now I will definitely agree with you in that aspect. We did not hear a lot about Javon Hargrave, but how many total snaps do I have him down for yesterday?
25 again or so, about the same as last week.
I don't remember how many. I don't have it in front of me.
I have it in front of me. Got him for 23, 35% of the snaps. Almost identical as last week.
Okay. I mean, didn't hear it. I mean, look, I think he's going to be fine.
Oh, yeah. No, just a comment. So, again, I walked away from the game and just saying, Again, the Steelers got the win. That's the most important thing. I just don't feel like I know a ton more about this team other than the fact that T.J. Watt and Anthony Chicolo and Bud Dupree look really good on the edge. I don't feel like I know a ton more about this team than I felt before the game.
I was really hoping to see Sam Bradford play against
me too. I was too. I was, you know, honestly disappointed. I wanted to see what the Steelers secondary would do with those guys with Bradford.
Because, I mean, as you stated it really at the top of the show and throughout, Case Keenum, look, I mean, this is a guy that started, I mean, this was his 25th, I think, start in the NFL. He played within the confines, I thought. How much difference would the quarterback play have made yesterday? I think Bradford probably makes a couple more of those throws. Maybe the decisions are a little bit better. Where he goes with the football. The running game wasn't bad anyway. But I mean, Case Keenum did, as you stated, stand in there and take a couple of hits. So. We'll have to wait and see, you know, because we don't know what we really learned right now because of the quarterback situation on the other side of football there. So, but, you know, 2-0, I mean, a lot of people for some reason seem to be upset right now, but a lot of teams A lot of teams would like to be 2-0 right now heading into Chicago, which, by the way, the Steelers have not had a lot of success in Chicago as an organization. In fact, they've only won one time there dating back to 1930-something, and that was that was the game in the snow where Jerome Bettis bowled over Brian Urlacher.
Yeah.
That was the only time the Steelers have beaten the Bears in Chicago. Now, how many times are we going to hear trap game and all like that this week? People should.
There's 16 games in the NFL.
They're all traps.
Yeah, there's 16 games. You could be ready to play every Sunday. So, Dave, a couple of interesting stories over the past 48 hours. And, of course, the one maybe most relevant to Steeler fans was the odd story about Lawrence Timmons and kind of going AWOL on the day before the game and being back. And Adam Schefter tweeted just an hour ago that Timmons is seeing some doctors. He had a personal issue, and he wants to be back practicing immediately and play this week. Very odd story.
Yes, it is. Very unlike him, uncharacteristic for him to do what he did.
We don't know what he did. Like, nobody know, just be out of touch, I guess.
Right. You almost wonder. I mean, you know, the CTE, and, you know, that's the kind of the first thing I think that pops into your head is, you know, this guy's taken a lot of hits in the NFL. Did he just wake up and, you know, not know what day it is? And I don't know. Really is kind of scary. I mean, he had a streak of 100 something games that was, you know, going for him as well too. Consecutive games started streak there. This is a guy that I don't think has missed a game since 2009. I mean, he's just not the kind of guy just to go AWOL there. So, thankfully, it sounds like he's safe and all. Adam Gase was asked about it after the game yesterday. He says he wasn't ready to talk about it. So, that kind of raised a flag or two. But maybe out of respect to Timmons, you want to talk to Timmons first. And I totally understand that. So, we'll see what happens. Drew Rosenhaus was South Florida sports talk show last night and really didn't have much to say other than it's a personal matter when it comes to Timmons. People can find all those quotes in the post that I wrote up last night on Steelers Depot. But really, really strange, and hope everything's okay with Lawrence Timmons. One of my favorite players.
The story coming out of Cincinnati, of course, they fired the offensive coordinator, make a move there. And now there's at least rumors about benching Andy Dalton, which we've seen A.J. McCarron play against the Steelers in the playoff game a couple of years ago. You're 2 weeks into the season. You just change your offensive coordinator. Your offensive line's terrible. That seems to me to be smacks of desperation at its highest level.
Yeah, look, I'm not the biggest Andy Dalton fan, but – pretty much you laid it out there. I mean, you already made a change at offensive coordinator there. You have to make sure that you give this a little bit of time. Andy is a capable quarterback, I think, and he's led him to the playoffs, you know, how many times now? So I think it's over the top right now to think or suggest that the Bengals just blow this thing up and bench Andy. Now, obviously, if he, you know, you got a couple of games coming up here against the Packers, and then I think the Browns after that. If he really flounders and you can pinpoint it as quarterback issues in this next two games, maybe you think about seeing what you have. Because, I mean, if you're 0-4, what are your chances of making the playoffs at that point? I mean, obviously, it's not impossible, as I like to say. But, you know, A.J. McCarron, you probably need to figure out real quick what you have in there as well, too, right? So, if you go 0-4 and Dalton really, really flounders, maybe you consider putting McCarron in there to see what he can do, because that will at least let you know, hey, maybe we need to cut Dalton. We can probably get out of that contract fairly cheap in 2018, and maybe we need to think about signing McCarron to a long-term deal, or maybe we need to go into the draft and, oh, Lord God, I hope they don't get Sam Darnold.
how about you know, the Browns might. I think the Jets or the Colts are the leaders there. But Zimmer, how about Zimmer saying Sam Bradford's fine? He could miss a week. He could miss 6 weeks. That was an odd quote.
Yeah, there's no reason to panic. Everybody, please stay seated when your tray table's up. I guess he's trying to say we're all day to day, right?
Yeah, that's what he was trying to say. Didn't come out very well, but that was Greg Olsen breaks his foot. Yonda out for the year.
Boy, the Ravens have just been just eaten alive, haven't they not?
I mean, 17 guys now on IR after what they went through last year.
I mean, they have just been ravaged. I wonder if their fans are blaming the trainers, like Steelers fans try to do when the Steelers have a slew of injuries there.
You know, slow starts for Zeke, along with Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, the three, you know, I'm not a fantasy guy, but certainly the top three backs of fantasy football, nobody's getting their money's worth there so far.
With the backs? That's definitely, David Johnson sideline, Le'Veon Bell not off to a great start. The kid, a lot of people I know spent an early round draft pick on the kid in Chicago, right? As well after the season that he had last year, not a good year to have an early draft pick spent on one of these running backs right now. Now we'll see what happens moving forward here. What about Beckham Jr.? Are you playing him tonight? No way I do.
Yeah, again, I'm not a fantasy guy, right? So I just kind of watch that stuff without much of a view. But if
I'm just talking from a head coach perspective.
Again, it goes back to this type of thing. It's the same thing with T.J. Watt. If the guy is cleared by the doctors and good to go, he plays. You know, there are only 16 games. If Beckham is not at further risk of doing damage than he would be normally, he plays. And if he is, then he doesn't play.
Okay, with the Bears, Steelers, I think, installed 7.5-point road favorites. Too much, not enough, just right?
I think it's probably the right line. I would expect Steeler fans and probably myself to can continue to expect more from this offense, and one of these days it's going to come. So, if I were putting it down today, I'd be laying it.
We all know the recent history. Mike Glennon, remember the game in Tampa a few years ago?
Oh, at Heinz Field, right? The crossing ground?
Well, was that? Yeah, I guess it was at Heinz Field. Yeah, I mean,
40 seconds left, and the guy goes a crossing route and up the middle for 42 yards and a touchdown. Steelers lose, or what? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't do. I mean, Glennon did a lot right in that game as well too. And yesterday he threw for 301 yards and a touchdown. He did have two interceptions. And right now you have to think that the Bears are 0-2. If they go 0-3, at what point do they pull the carpet out and start going Trubisky way? So
they answered that question. I mean, it's one of the headlines on NFL.com today is Bears not benching Glennon for rookie Trubisky. So
yeah, not yet
this week.
Yeah, not now.
right.
But I mean, Glennon. Glennon playing for his career right now. Every start's very, very meaningful right now with him, especially with that kid sitting back there. Wright had seven receptions for 69 yards in that game. The running backs, their running game, though, Howard and Cohen combined for 20 yards on 16 carries. The Steelers need and you know what happened? I mean, the Buccaneers just they pounced on them. Right away. I mean, they were what, 26 points up, 26-0 up on the Bears at halftime there. You if you jump on teams, and I don't know if you saw that Broncos dinner.
I did. I was going to ask you what the most interesting score on the board was yesterday, and for me that was it. Denver over Dallas. Trevor Siemian playing great. They crushed them.
Yeah, and look what happens when you jump on teams.
New England over New Orleans, that game was over at halftime.
Yeah, I mean, Tlaib or Chris Harris won after the game for the Broncos said, you know, that's how you got to beat Dallas. You jump on them. You're primarily like to be a run first team, and you get them in situations where Dak Prescott has to throw on every down, and you get what happens. They become a lot more predictable team. You can kind of pin your ears, and get after them then at that point. Boy, that Von Miller, man. Oh, boy, what a freak that guy is. But, a very, very surprising outcome there. Oakland really took it to the Jets yesterday there. That Seattle-San Francisco game was close. I had a feeling that one would be. And then Arizona almost let one slip away there in Indianapolis. I think Bruce Arians is kind of blaming Carson Palmer for all these issues right now. It's not him. It's not me. It's him.
Yeah, I got to see a little of the Baltimore-Cleveland game. Kaiser leaves that with a migraine. Baltimore again looked pretty good, particularly in the first half. They get the comfortable win. If you're picking the worst division of football right now, you're not picking the AFC North, but they're going to be in the conversation here. When the Ravens get out of the division and lose a couple games, because all of a sudden it doesn't look like it. And we said this at the beginning of the year. Neither of us saw the Ravens or the Bengals as a real stiff challenger to the Steelers. And although Flacco is a little better and the Ravens defense is solid, I don't feel that way, Dave. And I having watched them play a bit yesterday, I feel more than ever that, you know, this is certainly the Steelers' division to lose.
Well, boy, we're setting ourselves up here for a quite interesting Week 4 matchup, right? I mean, we could have Baltimore and Pittsburgh both 3-0, going into that game. And say what you will, the Ravens' defense is still for real, okay? So, I mean, that's going to keep them in a lot of games this year. Their offense, we'll see what happens. But their defense, as long as people stay healthy, going to keep them in a lot of games for sure. And Flacco's starting to get on the same page with guys like Macklin and that little running back Javarius Allen, I thought had a good game yesterday as well too. So going to be I'm looking forward to this Steelers versus Ravens game in Week 4 already.
Who do the Ravens have this week?
Who do they have? They have the Jaguars on the road.
Well, that'll be interesting because the Jaguars looked so good in Week 1 and got pasted by the Titans, who didn't look great in Week 1 themselves. The transitive property doesn't generally work very well in the NFL. But, so that'll be a good test for them.
All right, any kind of final thoughts on what happened? Sunday Steelers Vikings.
We didn't mention the tribute to Mr. Rooney, Dan Rooney. That was nice. Ben running out with the flag. Roger Goodell in the house. Some interesting news over the weekend on Roger Goodell with Jerry Jones maybe not supporting Roger Goodell getting an extension, thinking he's way overcompensated.
He has replied to that and really pretty much shot that down, by the way.
He did. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't see that. Again, the Steelers, they got a win. It wasn't a gold star all the way around, but it was good enough.
It's only the fifth time since Mike Tomlin took over that the Steelers have started a regular season 2-0. And obviously last time that happened was last year, right? And before that, it was like, I think 2007, 2008, and 2010, if my memory has not failed me there. So, 3-0 is something special in the NFL as well, too. So, big game. I know everybody's fearful because of the past and playing down to lesser quality opponents and yada, yada. I mean, like we said, every game, every week is a trap game, and I don't think I will be surprised if the Steelers drop this one on the road to the Bears. But we've got plenty of time to talk about that. We'll try to get a beat writer from the Bears on Wednesday to talk about this game. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And if you feel like donating to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button upright. Navigational bar. David and I will talk about what Tomlin had to say on Tuesday. We'll talk about what the All-22 from the Vikings game has to say, and hopefully be talking to a Bears beat writer as well. David, happy Monday.
Happy anniversary, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.